Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Rebecca Kelly, and welcome back to The Station, a fiction podcast about a girl named Ida Shepherd and a boy named Ale Bacchus, and how Ale is going to try and save Ida's life before she succumbs to the Earth's atmosphere in her dying space station. In today's episode, we'll listen to one of Ale and Ida's conversations. The two of them are getting close, and for Ale, this is all new territory. He's never felt quite so intrigued by anyone in his short 26 years of life. And for the 18-year-old Ida, she's never known anyone to care about her the way Ale does. Let's jump back into our story with Chapter 33 of The Station. Ale watched wearily as Tess paced back and forth in front of Jade's desk. He wasn't really listening to what she was saying, although he should have been, considering her medical and psychological observations were really important to Ida's safe return. The problem of the Soyuz niggled in the back of his mind. At first, he had been elated to find out that there was a return vessel already docked at the Delta. But the more they delved into the problems with the ship, the more he worried. Tess continued her animated report while Ale imagined cracked shields, unstable atmosphere regulation, and corrosive fuel leaks. The list of issues was mounting by the hour. "And from what she told me of her childhood," Tess continued, unaware of Ale's distracted mind, "her cognitive development was off the charts. The sensory motor stage of mental development generally takes a good 2 years before pre-operational memory and advanced motor skill. Ida actually remembers walking for the first time." As she paced, Tess made big sweeping motions with her arms in an attempt to illustrate how exciting this was to her. "It's unheard of," she continued, "and her mental abilities are far more advanced than a normal teenager. I mean, I'd kill to get a look through an MRI. I bet her temporal lobe and hippocampus developed at a much faster rate." Jade interrupted her, saying, "Yes, yes, she's outstanding. We get it. Why do you think she has such vivid memories of her childhood?" "Hard to say," Tess said, pausing to straighten the wrinkles out of her peach dress. "I suppose it could be the gravity environment. You know, the brain has only ever been studied in the developmental stage under the influence of surface gravity. It's possible that under a lighter gravity, it just develops differently. Of course, it could also be her unique situation." Ale, who had just caught the tail end of the monologue, said, "What do you mean by that? How would her situation affect physiological development? I mean, it's all biological, right? She's still a human, after all." "I mean," Tess continued, "that every day of her life has been a struggle just to keep things running and to keep her alive. Perhaps her memory developed at a sharper rate in order to protect her. Children who grow up under intense situations, such as war, abuse, or advanced illness, they develop different mechanisms to cope. I mean, maybe that's why her brain developed at such a fast pace. It could also have to do with conception. Studies have shown that brain development is inextricably tied to the environment under which conception takes place. Perhaps the microgravity had its effects as she was actually being formed in the womb." "What about her social skills?" Jade asked. "Well, that's another thing," Tess said. "She's detached, meaning she has an analytical rather than conversational nature to her speech. But honestly, that's to be expected. I mean, she's been alone for 3 years. And although her social skills are slightly underdeveloped, they aren't nearly as bad as you might think. For the most part, she's got a good mental grasp on things. She has a sense of humor, and she understands many of our language nuances and even pop culture references. Of course, her cultural references are 2 decades behind, but she still understands them. She told me that she watches movies, TV, YouTube videos. She reads books and articles, and she even listens to music from all genres and time frames. Because of her access to the station archives, she knows how other humans interact with each other. Plus, she had her mother around for most of her life. I mean, Nu's role in her development was obviously critical, and it seems like she did a really thorough job acclimating her daughter to human life, even in those odd circumstances." Well, Millicent was a product of NASA, after all, Jade said. Good work, Tess. Keep up your observations. And for heaven's sake, record everything. I want to make sure you've got full details so you can publish this. Of course, Tess said. Jade turned to Ale, which was Tess's cue that her time with the boss had come to an end. She took the hint and quietly left the room. What's the next step, Ale? How are we going to get her down? 2 hours later, Ale reported to the makeshift control center for his daily chat with Ida. He wasn't a big note-taker, but today he'd compiled a thorough list of items to discuss with her. He didn't want to leave anything to chance. He slipped on his headset and sent a page through the network. The person who'd been there before him said Ida had been out of contact for the past hour during her supper break. They had done some drills on the Soyuz computers earlier that afternoon, and he had good news for Ale. The computer seemed to be functioning as it should, no bugs or issues that they had come up with yet. This is Delta, came Ida's voice after a few seconds. They opted to continue using the old Delta call sign to follow traditional protocol, although it seemed totally ridiculous to Ale since Ida and Delta were essentially one and the same. It's not like they were in danger of mistaking her for someone else. How's the garden today? Ale asked. The garden is spectacular, but then again, it's spectacular every day, she replied. Instead of starting in on the details of the plan, Ale had something else on his mind for today's chat. He had realized just days earlier that he had no idea what Ida looked like. Since this realization, he had become semi-obsessed with knowing. It was a curiosity that he couldn't drop, and he knew it. He could, of course, ask her to send him a picture. They had the ability to download pictures from Nix's cameras, but they were currently busy downloading as much information from the Delta's database that it would be hard to stop the process so Ida could send Ale a picture of herself. Plus, he felt really weird about asking this girl to send him a selfie. They had a few pictures of her when she was a baby, taken from news medical updates in the station archives, but nothing recent. She must have sensed his curiosity because she asked, "What's on your mind today?" He hesitated, unsure of what she might think of this line of questioning. He finally decided that he couldn't bear the thought of not knowing any longer. So he asked, "Well, this may sound strange, but I'm curious if you could describe what you look like for me." Just saying the words out loud made him blush. Fortunately, most of the night shift was down in the cafeteria loading up on Thursday night's special, chicken enchiladas. A few minutes of banter with her wouldn't hurt. "You want me to tell you what I look like?" she asked. He listened closely to her tone, waiting for annoyance to pop up. But she didn't sound annoyed by the question, just surprised. "I guess I never thought about that before," she said. "Well, I don't mean to put you on the spot," he said. "I'm just curious, is all. You could say that curiosity is one of my weaknesses. If you'd like, I can tell you what I look like, too." Okay, he really felt strange now, but he was also excited. Telling her more about himself and hearing more about her was honestly more exciting to him than the last two NBA Finals games put together. Of course, that wasn't saying much. The Minnesota Timberwolves had taken both games decidedly. Game 4 would be tomorrow night, and he expected the T-Wolves to win the title in a sweep. Ida was quiet for a moment, and when she spoke again, he snapped out of his basketball daydream. "I don't know. I mean, there's really nothing special about me. I stand 1.7 meters when I'm in microgravity, 1.6 meters when I stand in the G. Tess says that I'll probably be shorter than that when I come down to the surface." "When?" Ale said in a whisper, barely audible, even to himself. "When she comes down to the surface," he thought. His heart tip-tapped a bit at the thought of that. Then he said, louder so she could hear, Yeah, gravity does that sort of stuff." Ida continued, "I weigh about 9.5 kilograms in the G, but of course that will be different too. I have light brown hair, and my skin is pale. Too pale, really. I look like a ghost sometimes, almost gray." She paused to clear her throat, then continued, "I do have freckles on my nose and cheeks. My mother always told me how much she loved them." "What color are your eyes?" he asked. They are brown, like my mother's. Brown, he repeated softly. Without thinking, he closed his eyes and tried to draw a picture of her in his mind. He knew from diagrams and NASA archival photos what the Delta space station looked like on the inside. He imagined the interior of the VP as it looked in pictures, covered with windows on all sides, the Earth splayed out in a brilliant display of color below. He pictured her, Ida, hovering just above the largest pentagonal window, staring out over the planet, her brown hair pulled back at the nape of her neck, with rogue strands standing on end around her head. In his imagination, she was wearing gray cotton shorts and a matching t-shirt that would have been standard operating apparel for the crew of the Delta. The Ida in his mind turned her head and looked directly at him, her brown eyes dark and wide, and the freckles on her nose giving her face a childlike quality. Then she smiled, her lips pulling up slightly at the edges. Nothing big, but a smile nonetheless as she began to float towards him. He could feel his heart rate pick up, his breath ceased for a moment, and then she said his name. Ale, are you still there? Ida's real voice this time crackled over the radio, making him jump, his eyes flying open. Even with his eyes open, he could still see her in his mind. He said, I'm sorry, Ida, I was just thinking about something. Is there anything else you'd like to know? She asked. I guess not. I was curious, that's all. Thank you for that. Now I have a face to put with the voice. I'm curious about your name, Ale, she said, obviously ready to change the subject. It's not a very common name. How did your parents come up with it? It's short for Alexandros, which was my great uncle's name on my mother's side. My parents are both Greek, and their families come from similar areas in Greece. The nickname has been with me since I was a kid. Do you have siblings? Yes, my older brother is Nicholas. We call him Nick. He is 3 years older than I am. I'm not very close to him, though. Well, that's a shame. I always wonder what it would have been like to have a sibling, someone to keep me company, she said. Ida didn't often sound lonely to Ale. He figured that she was, given her situation, but he never really heard it in her voice until now. You know, he said, it's interesting that you say that, because even though he was there, my brother, I was still lonely. I mean, he was older than I was, so he kind of beat up on me when we were little, and then for a while he was, like, too cool to be seen with me. But I guess just knowing he was there was something I could always fall back on, even if we didn't get along. Tell me about your parents, she said. My mother is Christine. She lives here in Baltimore, and I take her to church every Sunday. She was a poet and an author before the war. When the bombing started, she went to work in a factory that manufactured parts for battle drones. She came to America when she was only 10 years old, but she has all these poems and stories written about her life in Greece. Sometimes I think about getting her to put them together into a book, you know, but she's not really interested in it. I think the memories of her family are too painful for her, now that most of them are gone. The war was hard on her, you see. It took many people out of her life. And what about your father? She asked. His name was Nicholas, too, like my brother. He was born in New York. His parents immigrated here before he was born. He moved to Baltimore to go to college, and that's where he met my mother. She still cries when she looks at pictures of him. Ale paused and closed his eyes. He never spoke much about his father. What happened to him? She asked. He was killed in the war. When the bombing started, I was 8 years old. He enlisted in the Navy the very next day, and we never saw him again, he said. Ida remained silent. In a way, he was glad she hadn't said anything like, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, or gee, that must have been hard. Her silence somehow meant more than those words would have. Ale was surprised at how good it felt to talk about his father with Ida. He continued, my father always loved his Greek heritage, but he was so proud to be an American. He was on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific, off the coast of South America. We aren't sure what happened, but we know that the ship was bombed by the SA and it sunk near Santiago, Chile. Ali glanced at his watch. They had been chatting now for over 20 minutes, and he knew he needed to move on. I should probably get going with the technical stuff now, he said. Then, with a slight smile and a chuckle, he added, we're kind of on a timeline, you know? He heard Ida giggle at his joke, and the sound made his smile widen. Oh, I am aware of the timeline, she said. We've been doing research on the Soyuz, Ali said. It's really old tech, and I mean really old, like Cold War Soviet era stuff. The good news is that even though it's old, it's reliable. That's why they continued to use it for so many years. I mean, NASA had various other transport ships too, but the Soyuz was still the primary spacecraft, even though it had been around for so long. I mean, that thing was built to last. Hopefully we won't have to make too many modifications to it before re-entry. Great, Ida said. Where do we start? Thanks for listening, sci-fi fans. The next episode of The Station, honestly, is a difficult one for me. We will actually learn about Nu's final days on board the Delta and how Ida handles the desperate situation she finds herself in. We'll see you then. Bye.